The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now in Washington, it seems as if the Trump administration is going to take the hardest line possible with, among other things, Iran. Trump was critical of President Obama's nuclear deal with Iran from the very beginning. But you don't appoint a man like John Bolton, a vocal and very aggressive advocate for preemptive strikes, unless you want to make people very, very nervous. Now, that hard line is being received with absolute joy in Saudi Arabia, which is a bitter enemy of Iran and its chief rival in the Middle East. Staff writer Dexter Filkins has been reporting on Saudi Arabia under its new ruler, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, known as MBS. MBS represents a huge change in that country. He's young, he's seen as a reformer, and he's working overtime to change the way that Americans think about Saudi Arabia. Dexter Filkins is recently back from Riyadh, and we started out talking about a magazine that we'd found at Walmart, all of its glossy pages dedicated to the greater glory of MBS. So, Dexter, I've got in my hands, before we have a serious conversation about Mohammed bin Salman and Saudi Arabia, I've got this publication, this magazine, that sells for a mere $13.99 on the newsstand called The New Kingdom. And apparently, this is a publication put out by the folks at American Media, the people who do the National Enquirer and much else. What is this? Look at this.
Yeah, it looks like a superhero comic book. You know, Boy King transforms the universe. And there's this very flattering photo of him. And at the bottom of every page, it says The Magic Kingdom, which I guess is referring to...
It's a little Disney-ish,
to the Magic Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
What's amazing as I flip through this magazine is that there are just beautiful pictures of, you know, windmills and falconry and women getting together. It's like a fantasy of what Saudi Arabia is or could be.
Well, I think they're trying to sell MBS as the savior of Saudi Arabia. And this is what the kingdom could be. And as many people put it to me, this guy's going to be king for 50 years. And this is the Saudi Arabia that he wants. And so he's kind of turning the big aircraft carrier in another direction.
So MBS is just in the United States, and he met a tremendous number of people, whether they're in politics or business, and it clearly is a huge diplomatic and PR effort going on. Who is MBS, and why is he different from the King of Saudi Arabia and his predecessors?
Well, he's the crown prince, so he's the next in line to become king. And as somebody put it to me, an American diplomat, we're used to, you know, when we get on the phone with the King of Saudi Arabia, he's 85 years old and he's kind of half asleep and he mumbles a lot. And then the phone call's over. And this guy talks, you know, he's engaged.
He's 32 years old.
He's 32 years old. He's ambitious. He's impatient. He's charming. He's charismatic. He's tall. He's on the make.
So even as crown prince, MBS has been making some liberalizing moves. He's promised to overhaul the Saudi economy. He's lifted restrictions, including women driving. Is he offering real reform?
Yes, but it's important to distinguish what kind of reforms. He It definitely wants to open up the economy. There's a lot of economic reforms that he's initiated. He's trying to restrain the clergy. He's letting women drive. The one thing that's not on the table is political reform. This is all about saving the House of Saud.
And maintaining power. So what is the economic predicament of Saudi Arabia?
It's pretty dire.
We think of them as just magnificently wealthy.
And they are. But they're burning cash at an extraordinary rate. And it's a vast welfare state where almost everything is subsidized from food to gasoline to education to healthcare, housing. But what's happening is that the whole economy was built on the idea that oil would be about $100 a barrel. It's about 60 right now. And so they're just basically burning through their savings. And so as somebody put it to me in the story, at current trends, in 5 to 7 years, Saudi Arabia is broke. They're running out of money.
Unless they do what? Because I don't expect that in 5 to 7 years, the petro economy will disappear.
It won't disappear, but they can't sustain what they have. They don't export anything else. They import virtually everything else. So they've got to diversify. They got to do something else.
Now, MBS has also talked about inspiring a Saudi entertainment industry. I don't normally think of Riyadh as a kind of proto-Hollywood or New York or Paris in that way.
It's amazing. He's doing it. Movie theaters, concerts, you know, with certain restraints, but he's doing it.
So Tom Friedman at the New York Times came back from doing an interview with MBS in Riyadh, and he wrote an extremely enthusiastic column, said he was rooting for him, and he got some pushback for this on human rights, on any number of issues. And Friedman appeared at the Brookings Institute, and he'd been asked whether he had been kind of foolhardy to be too optimistic about MBS's rule. And here was Friedman's response.
I got news for you. The entire Arab world is dysfunctional right now. And so when I see someone having the balls to take on the religious component of that, to take on the economic component, to take on the political, with all of his flaws, okay, that I want to invest just a little. I just want to stick my head up and say, God, I hope you succeed. And when you do that, the holy hell comes down on you. Okay, well, that. Okay, is my view. Okay, so.
What do you think? You agree with Friedman?
Yes and no. I mean, he's right about, okay, we got somebody in here who wants to, like, change it up, and all power to him. I think the problem with that kind of unbridled enthusiasm is it ignores the kind of darker side of what's happening.
Well, let's get into the darker side of what's happening. Where are the main areas?
So in addition to all these things that he's done, at the very same time, he's arrested human rights leaders. He's detained journalists.
There's not going to be freedom of speech.
Absolutely not. I mean, that's just off the table. And in many ways, he's tougher than his predecessor. So he's clamping down on any kind of notion of political reform at the same time. And then, of course, we have the famous now wave of arrests when he dragged in dozens of very wealthy Saudis, even some of his relatives.
But he put them in that well-known prison, the Ritz-Carlton, which was a very peculiar thing, no?
Very peculiar. I mean, the you know, it's a hotel for princes. It's just not generally for princes under arrest.
And maybe the main thing that happened at the Ritz-Carlton is that MBS forced any number of these people to give up either all of their assets or billions of dollars, tremendous amounts of assets, all in the name of anti-corruption. How is that done, and toward what political end?
Well, you know, some of these were the richest people in the world were suddenly locked up in the Ritz-Carlton. And so as best we understand it, when they were sitting in their hotel rooms, from which the doors had been removed and anything that could be used to harm themselves, they were interrogated and their financial documents were kind of laid out in front of them, and they negotiated and arrived at a figure. And it usually, as I understand, it wasn't all of their money. It was some of it. So you're worth $2 billion, we get a billion. And so it was kind of agreed to, and then you signed that away. Everybody kind of shook hands, and then no one spoke about it when they came out. They didn't want anything really bad to happen to them.
Did anything bad happen to them?
It looks like it.
What happened?
There's at least one person who died in custody, it looks like under pretty grim circumstances. But at the end of the day, MBS got $100 billion from in the big shakedown.
The Saudi government got $100 billion from it. Wow. Your piece seems to imply that MBS has been making deals with the United States, and the Trumps are pleased to be making these deals for two reasons. One for geopolitical reasons, and the other is for potentially for personal reasons. So this is more difficult to ferret out.
Yes.
Let's start with geopolitical. In the Obama administration attempted to create a kind of detente, or better to say, a balance of powers in the region by dealing with Iran, signing a nuclear deal, dealing with it in all the complexity that you have to deal with Iran. Now you have the Trump administration, which sees a pure friend in Saudi Arabia and a pure enemy in Iran.
That's exactly what happened. I mean, the Trump administration came in and said, this whole thing about sharing the neighborhood, which is what Obama said to the Saudis, share it. We're tearing that up. And we're going to go after Iran. And so, you know, the Iranians have essentially come to dominate, as they see it, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Yemen. They're everywhere. They're on the march. And we are going to roll them back. And I heard that phrase many times talking to people in the Trump administration, roll back the Iranians. And so in the past year, what have we seen? The Saudis and the Emiratis essentially tried to overthrow the government in Qatar. They think Qatar is too close to Iran. They tried to essentially overthrow the government in Lebanon. And then they launched this, you know, enormous and very bloody bombing campaign in Yemen, intervening in the civil war there because they see the Iranians as essentially behind
it. Which the United States assists in.
Yes, I mean—
On the Saudi side.
Yeah, I mean, the Obama White House kind of held their nose and said, okay, we'll keep sending you the bombs to drop. But they really didn't like it. And the Trump administration said, just, you know, go to it.
Dexter, you've explained the geopolitical reasons why the Trumps are going to be close to MBS and have been. There's also the personal aspect, the personal financial aspect to it. How would you break that down?
Well, this is complicated, but both the Trump and the Kushner families have financial interests in the Middle East.
So Qatar, which is home to a key American airbase, is currently the target of a blockade. Probably not by coincidence, but you tell me. Your reporting turned up evidence of a failed real estate deal between the Qataris and the Kushner family. What happened? And it seems to be a factor in the administration's attitude toward the blockade of Qatar.
It's all this is just remarkable. I'm shaking my head. The Kushner companies owns the big high rise
666 Fifth Avenue,
and with that has a mortgage of $1 billion, more than $1 billion, that's coming due soon. As I was told by a very credible source in the financial industry, the Kushner companies in April 2017 came to the Qataris in the St. Regis Hotel in Manhattan
looking
for $1 billion. They asked for $1 billion.
As one does.
Yeah, as one does. They had a big plan to kind of renovate the building and kind of make it all work. And the Qataris, they have a sovereign wealth fund with $300 billion in it. They have money to burn. They looked at the deal that Kushner had kind of laid out for them, Charles Kushner, Jared's father, and said, you know, forget it. Thanks very much, but no thanks. 6 weeks later, there's a blockade announced on Qatar.
John Bolton's going to be national security advisor very soon. How do his priorities and record square with MBS?
This is going to be a very unpredictable period. I think John Bolton is on, I think he wrote an op-ed for the New York Times a few years ago, essentially calling for preemptive strikes against Iran. That's just exactly the sort of thing that MBS is thinking.
MBS compares the Iranian leadership to Hitler.
Yes. I had these conversations when I was in Riyadh. They said it's the Nazi ideology. And they do not merely want to dominate the Gulf. They want to destroy Saudi Arabia and conquer Saudi Arabia. And we are – it's no more Mr. Nice Guy. And so instead of what you had, I think, in the Obama administration – was they were essentially restraining the Saudis from getting into some kind of serious, maybe a shooting match with the Iranians in the Gulf. Now it's a completely different ballgame. I mean, now essentially, I think with Bolton and even to a certain extent with Mike Pompeo, the new Secretary of State, they're going to be going after the Iranians.
Do you think the Iranian nuclear deal is done?
Maybe. My sense is they want the Iranians to cry uncle. I mean, they're looking for a reason to back away from it.
Dexter, thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
That was Dexter Filkins, a staff writer at The New Yorker. You can find his piece on MBS, the Saudi leader Mohammed bin Salman, and everything Dexter has written for us at newyorker.com.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.